Is he going someplace where people are saying, don't worry, you don't have to be a follower of Jesus, you'll still get in? And I don't even want to split hairs and go there. I just want to say, why would you want anything else other than Jesus' rule? No matter what it might cost in terms of temporary uncomfortableness, why would you want to own yourself? I told you this story a couple of months ago, driving home from the Tuesday night Bible study, and just doing this inventory of everything that was out of control in my life. By the way, that's a really bad habit. Don't get caught in that. You know, feed your brain with the stuff that God's doing, the stuff that is in control. But if you sit and start thinking of everything that's out of your control, it'll drive you crazy. You'll be like this after a while. But I remember I'm driving along the road and I'm thinking, and I remember saying out loud, I was all by myself in the car, and I said, I have absolutely no control over anything in my life. And just clear as a bell, that still small voice that where God told you where to go to church, the Lord said, you want control? That very tone of voice, it's like, excuse me? That's a good thing that you don't have control over anything in your life because you belong to me. Not having control of your life is not the same as your life being out of control. For a believer, it simply means I've shifted the control to him. Can I tell you one little story? And I love this story, and I can't even remember where I read this. I think it was in Hannah Whiteall Smith's book, The Christian Secret of a Happy Life. And if I was rich, and I'm not rich right now, even despite that $6,000 check, I would buy a copy of that book for everybody I know. It's a great book. She tells the story of a person who is hitchhiking along the road in the days of horses and buggies, and they're carrying this huge pack with everything they own on their back. And they look so tired that a person with a wagon stops and said, would you like a ride? And they said, well, absolutely, I would. So the person carrying the burden on their back climbs up into the buckboard, still with the pack on their back. And the farther they go, the person driving the buckboard says finally, you know, you can take that pack off. There's plenty of room in the back. And the person said, well, thank you very kindly, but you're giving me a ride. I can't ask you to give my burden a ride as well. I remember when I read that, I thought, that's me. Oh, God, thank you for saving my soul. Thank you for, you know, promising that you're going to get me to heaven. Don't worry, I'll carry these burdens. I can't push this off on you. I mean, you got other stuff. When I disown myself, the fringe benefit of that is that then all the pressure is off of me, isn't it? Isn't it silly how we act like we're orphans when we're not? We're told we're not. In our best moments, we know we're not. We know we have a Father who calls us his own, who'll never leave us. We know that. But in the way that we live it out, we still carry those burdens. So when Jesus is inviting us to disown ourselves, you know, he knows that's going to fly in the face of the culture that we live in, but he says this is going to be for your benefit because you weren't built to carry those burdens anyway. It's going to take all the pressure off of you. So that's verb number one, imperative. Volitional, meaning it's a choice to make. Take up his cross is the second one. Luke adds, I think, a very important adverb. Take up his, I think it's an adverb, daily. Daily take up his cross. Which I like that. The other Gospels don't all quote that, but Luke does. I like throwing that in there when I run through this because I know that sometimes the commitments that I made yesterday and the day, I leak. You know what I mean? You don't know me as well. Those who have known me for 30 years know I am not the same person now that I used to be. I used to be absolutely consumed with fear. My whole I couldn't sleep at night. I had a heart attack in my 30s over just sheer stress and worry. And that is still my default mechanism when I don't choose to unburden, to take off the pack and let Jesus carry it. My default mechanism is I can go right back there so quickly. So these are words that need to be applied. Take up means to carry. Take up his cross daily. That means it is a posture of willingness to follow and obey Jesus in all of the no matter what's. If it involves uncomfortableness, if it involves suffering. At the time that Jesus said this, the crosses were not pieces of jewelry. They weren't wonderful signs that we see in the sky to remind us of the story of salvation. It was an instrument of torture and death. And the Romans had this especially perverted, twisted way with people they were executing. They didn't just want to execute them, they wanted to humiliate them as a deterrent for rebellion amongst other of their subjects. And what they would do is they would make the person who was about to be executed on the cross, they'd make them carry it to the place of execution. You know the story that how Jesus was so weak, he couldn't even carry the cross. They told him to do it, and he was too weak to carry it. So somebody else had to come in and carry his cross to Golgotha. So everybody under Roman rule, the time that Jesus said this, knew that what he was talking about taking up their cross, it was speaking of suffering or death. I don't know how to say it in kinder terms. So Jesus is saying the posture that needs to happen for those that are going to follow me is that you have to be willing to suffer and to be uncomfortable and even to die if necessary. Maybe, it may not be, but the willingness has to be there. These are especially poignant words when you look at the fact that every one of the disciples bailed out on him when they thought it was going to be their necks along with his. Every one of them did. They were forgiven. They were restored. But they also had to live with that betrayal in their minds. They had to realize that, you know, when push came to shove, I loved Jesus. He was my friend. He never did one thing wrong to me. I swore I would give my life for him. I'd take a bullet for you, buddy. You know, I swore that. And then when push came to shove, when it was my neck, if I was along, you know, seen to be along with him, I ran for the hills. And then you have to live with that. So these words that Jesus is saying, he's saying, I'm going someplace, literally, not just figuratively, where if you're going to be with me, it isn't going to be a ticker tape parade down the main street of Jerusalem, and you're not going to be, you know, on CNN as the men of the hour. And I think it's so kind that he prepared them. There was a time in the United States of America where these were such foreign words to us. I think that the culture around us makes it not too, it's not a real stretch to believe that being associated with Jesus could cost you. Some postal worker can just be in such a bad mood and decide, I am going to wipe the smile of everybody who thinks they're better than us because they have Jesus, and, you know, climbs up in a tower and starts shooting people. It's not a stretch. It's happened. It's happening in other places. So the fact that Jesus said, look, I want you with me, but you have to understand that's going to put you in a target zone. And you need to be willing to be there if you want to be with me. I find that to be kindness that he would even tell us that. I want to say something about the cross I bear. That's a cliche, isn't it? When we talk about, well, that's the cross that I bear, this is the way that we interpret it. Well, I'm not tall, I'm not dark, I'm not handsome, I wasn't born in a rich family, and that's just the cross I bear. Meaning that these are circumstances out of my control, which have been thrust upon me, and they're unpleasant, but you know, what you gonna do? It's not fatalism. That's not what taking up your cross. That's a willful choice that you make. It's a willful choice to follow him no matter what. And that it needs to be a daily posture. And I have to tell you once again that I've been on both sides of this. I've been on the yippee-doodle, yes, Lord, yeah, I'm with you, man, when everything was fabulous. And then when everything turned against me, and I realized that if I was going to stay with Jesus, I was going to be walking deeper into the trouble zone. Then you face that choice and say, I'm going to serve you. I want to be with you. I trust you that you will get me through whatever hard parts of the path that lie ahead. But I want to be with you no matter what. By the way, denying yourself, taking up your cross, and following Jesus, all of that will be tested. It will. If it hasn't been yet, you got off easy. But it will. It will, because we live in a fallen world that's getting increasingly more hostile towards our King. There's no neutral place. There's no way to get out of the battle. I remember the first time I saw the Chronicles of Narnia, the first movie of this recent trio that came out. It was so exciting to see, you know, how they did Aslan and all of that. But I remember when it came to the end, of course, I'm thinking Emma's going to love this. I can't wait because she loves animals. She's, you know, her dream would be Jesus being a talking lion. I mean, how cool is that? But then when it came to the battle scene and animals were being killed and there was pain, then I remember saying out loud as I'm watching this, I'm thinking, too bad it's not a nice battle. And then I thought, wow, I need to have that in the front part of my brain. It's a battle. It's a real battle. We have an enemy. That's not all we have. We have a King, and he's going to be the victor. But that doesn't make the battle a nice battle. There are casualties. And Jesus said, you just need to know where we're going, folks. We're going where I'm going, at least temporarily, for some of you is going to involve suffering. Are you willing to follow even then? Figuratively and literally, that was where Jesus was headed. The third imperative volitional verb here is the verb follow. I'm going to give it to you just because it's fun to pronounce. Akolutheo. Akolutheomouse. Akolutheo for Sandra out there writing this down. It's a great word. The verb tense speaks of be always following. If you want to be with me, then you have to be always following. Akolutheo. It's a great word. It's a fat word. It's not just a word of geographical proximity. It's not just a word of, yeah, I see you up there, Jesus. I see you. I see you, man. Not that. It speaks of close companionship. It speaks of following his example, not just his steps. But of course, the fringe benefit of that is you get to be with him. This was not so appealing to me. I distinctly remember being a 12-year-old kid hearing messages about discipleship in the sort of the semi-Nazi church that I went to that was very, very legalistic and controlling. And all I could picture was this giant sucking sound, sucking all of the joy out of my life. You know that fun thing you like to do? That's it. It's over, baby. You know, you're going to be with Jesus. You have to, you know, have this wooden Indian posture in your life. I did not know him very well. And the other thing was I didn't know very many happy Christians. So why would I want to join that club? I have to say, I still don't know very many happy Christians. I do know Jesus better, and I want to be with him. I want to go where he's going. I know what happens when I get my own will. Now the heavenly angels dial 911 as soon as they see Bob getting his will, because they knew it's a matter of time he's going to need an ambulance. Here's the thing about following. Oswald Chambers says the best thing about this that I've ever heard. It's so logical, it's so clear, it's so disobeyed. It says, we cannot call ourselves followers of Jesus if we are taking the initiative. Because followers follow. Duh. But isn't that so un-American, isn't it? Our posture in 21st century America in the church for a large part is, Lord, take up your cross and follow me. Oh, God, here's my plans. I've laid them out in great detail. I've got copies if you need extra copies. Oh, God, here's a little handy little timetable. Here's all my plans. Oh, God, bless my plans. And the whole concept of following where he is in the lead is so foreign to us. And once again, the more I know him, the easier it is to do this. And you can't judge the whole story by what chapter you're in right now either. I discovered this. I can't tell you how hard I fought moving to Maine. Well, I have told you a zillion times, haven't I? But you know what? I got out here. And after a period of uncertainty and trying to just live each day as somebody that loved Jesus without really knowing why I was here, the things I would have never thought possible, my wildest dreams came true. I mean, I made more money on royalties after I gave up my career, hands down. I got married. I owned well over $1 million worth of property. Pretty much could eat anywhere I wanted to eat and do anything I wanted to do. And in a really short period of time, lost all of it. Saw the church growing, lost almost everybody. Hardly anybody left. Now it's starting to grow again. But every time I freak out on this chapter, the Lord just says, you know, this isn't the end of the story. You don't know what the next chapter is going to come. It can go either way. It could get worse. It could get way better. The important thing is that if I trust him, I'll follow him. I don't make decisions based on self-protection or my own comfort as a disciple, as a follower. I go where he wants me to go. That's the rules. That's the terms. Now, he doesn't force us to do this, does he? He says, hey, you don't want to go where I go. That's fine. You know, angelic paramedics will be standing by because you're going to need to speed dial 911 probably pretty soon, because the safest place for you to be is with me, he's saying. But you can go where you want to go, do what you want to do. But it's not going to give you what you think it's going to be giving you. And that's what he says in this next passage. I just wrote down one little comment and I'll pass it on to you. I wrote down one little thing in my notes saying, why don't I like following sometimes? Yeah, that's it, isn't it? I don't like it because it makes, sometimes following Jesus means I wait. When I hate waiting. We were talking about this Wednesday night when we've been studying things James has to say about being patient. I've hated those words ever since I was 5 years old. Be patient. The only ones I hate worse than that are sit still. I hate that. The irony is that if that's your lifestyle, what happens is you get to be an adult and you don't know how to sit still. I would rather sometimes try something that I know will not work. I know it won't work, but I still would rather try it than have to just sit there and wait. And sometimes following Jesus, he says, son, sit there. Just sit there. It's not time yet. He always has a good reason. So that's one of the reasons I don't like being a follower. It involves waiting sometimes. Sometimes it involves changing my plans. I'm heavily invested in my plans. I've researched them thoroughly. But you know the folly of trying to talk God into your plans? Because it assumes that his are junk. He doesn't know what he's doing. And whenever, you know, the plan looks like it's going south and I've got my five backup plans, the Lord just says, it's not going to work either. You just need to trust me. You need to follow where I'm going. He says it in this way to me. He says, Bob, this is the path that leads to the blessing. I know it stinks right now, but it's going to where the blessing is. So don't leave the path. Stay there. Follow me. That's where I'm headed. Yeah, it looked different in a temporary sense for these guys. The short-term unfolding of God's plan looked horrible. It looked like their worst nightmare. Was it their worst nightmare? Oh, no. It was the best thing that's ever happened on this planet. The suffering was temporary. By the way, for the believer, all suffering is temporary. And therefore, all disappointment with God is premature. We're all going to be giving him a standing ovation at the end. So, that's verse 34. Okay, verse 35. We'll be here till 3 o'clock, won't we? No, it'll go quicker from here. I just don't want to water any of that down. Because all of our desire to comply with this will be tested by circumstances, by resistance, by our own families sometimes, by our own fears sometimes. Verse 35, notice once again it starts with the no exceptions word, whoever. And the very next word, wants to, is the same verb, phalo, as in verse 34. It is a different verb tense. It's a verb tense that speaks of a continuous posture towards something, a habitual or customary or repeated attitude about something. So what he's saying is, whoever, no exceptions. Whoever is always intending or always in a posture of desiring to save their life. That isn't going to work. Whoever, no exceptions. Self-protection won't work. Self-determination isn't going to get you what you think it's going to get you. This is one of those oxymorons that a lot of people don't believe. But either Jesus was lying or it's the truth, because they're both promises, both sides of this coin. The one side that says if the posture of your life is at all costs, you are going to protect yourself. You're going to look after you. It won't work. You're going to lose the very thing that you're trying to protect. You can't do it.